My name is Riley, but not many of you know me by that name. The last time I stood and spoke in front of this congregation, I had long hair, painted nails, and probably wore a skirt. I'm sure some of you are a little confused, others not so much, but that's okay. I'm transgender. For those of you who don't know what that fully means, I'm a boy. I always have been, though I haven't always been able to express that in a physical sense. I've been through a lot of changes in these past 3 years, and while I could stand and speak about my personal transition, I won't. The fact is, I am one of very few lucky individuals who understood their gender identity at a young age and who had the complete support of their family and friends. Most transgender individuals don't have those luxuries. There are people who don't come to terms with their gender until much later in life. People who can't afford the transition, people who don't fully want to transition, and even people who are cast out from their loved ones for expressing themselves as trans. I'd love nothing more than to stand here and speak positively about societal acceptance of the transgender community. But the truth is, despite my own positive experiences, most of us are not regarded as legitimate human beings. Thursday, November 20th, has been recognized as Transgender Day of Remembrance. It was organized to honor the memories of those killed in acts of transphobic violence. However, I'd like to add on to that. To me, it's a day honoring not only those who were killed, but those who were injured, those who were tormented verbally, and those who took their own lives as a result. I'd like to honor the trans people who are still with us, who stood up for themselves, who struggled, who pushed to express what they felt inside, because as important as it is to honor the dead, it's equally as important to honor the living so that we may work towards preventing future deaths. One of the main struggles that trans people face in their transition is a lack of validation. People think of gender as strictly black and white. You have male and female, and oftentimes if a trans person doesn't fit into the exact opposite of their birth gender, people don't regard them as legitimate. If a trans girl displays masculine traits, for example, she's criticized, or if a trans boy displays feminine traits, he might be taunted. But the fact is that gender is a spectrum. Not every person displays strictly male or female traits, and to apply that expectation to transgender people is unfair. You might be thinking, what can I do? It's a little overwhelming to think about all the changes that need to be made to society. But there is one simple thing that everyone here can do that will make transgender people feel just that much more validated. If a child draws a cat and says it's a dragon, you wouldn't correct them and ruin their excitement or their childish creativity, would you? Likewise, if a transgender person asks you to call them by a specific name or set of pronouns, listen to them. You might not agree with their choices or their transition. You might not understand them entirely. And you may wonder why they dress or act a certain way. But only they know how they feel and wish to be acknowledged and expressed. So just how you would change your perspective to speak to a child, call the trans person what they want to be called, and they will feel respected and validated as a legitimate human being. Thank you so much for listening and for helping to play a part in changing our society.
Thank you. Before I start, I just want to recognize all of the babies that are with us today. It's more, I think, than I've seen all together in one space, and it's just beautiful and wonderful. There's no better sign of the newness of life than to see all and hear the laughing and gurgles and giggling of all of the babies among us. So I'm just tickled by that today. I sometimes wish I'd been young in the 70s because I always wanted to be a radical. But today it's difficult for me to say those words in light of the events in Paris and around the world. The word radical feels much more fraught and complicated to speak about with any sense of wistfulness. Especially given that much of the 70s radicalism was defined by public violence, bombings in particular. So let me be clear, I do not condone violence of any kind, especially in the name of political or religious ideology. And at the same time, I have long admired the ideals of revolutionary liberalism. The ideals that strident rhetoric is not enough and real social and political change requires action, sometimes extreme action. My vision of this radicalism came from my own exposure to the injustices around me as I grew up, from my parents' involvement in social issues, and from my liberal arts education. In graduate school, I read Paulo Freire's Pedagogy of the Oppressed, and it opened me up to a world of revolutionary thinking as he championed the idea that freedom is acquired by conquest, not by gift. It must be pursued constantly and responsibly. Of course, for Freire, that conquest might look like teaching 300 oppressed sugarcane farmers to read so that they would be eligible to vote in Brazil elections, and being jailed for doing so. Now that I am a pacifist, my understandings and practice of radicalism have shifted. Align more with Freire than with Eldridge Cleaver of the Black Panther Party. The radicalism I subscribe to still has a revolutionary quality in that it is meant to resist and disrupt some of our social and political norms, to widen our boundaries and expand our thinking, to push us outside our comfort zone of daily living, to be out of the ordinary. Hence the notion of radical hospitality, a practice of revolutionary welcome beyond just being polite, one that pushes us to draw the circle of compassion and generosity so wide that all among us feel at home. Hospitality is a time-honored virtue in our culture. We seem to revere the notion, especially of Southern hospitality, a rose-colored picture that anyone would be welcome to sit on the porch and have a glass of tea. And yet, based on what we know about Southern history and practices today, this is a distorted notion of hospitality. Not everyone is welcome at the table. Our culture has shown us that. Hearing the names of these precious souls whose lives were violently taken because of hate and intolerance, and those also in Paris and around the world, we are called to resist and disrupt. When we hear about racial injustice in our midst, we are called to resist and disrupt. When we think about the hateful speech directed at refugees, which will now only get worse, we are called to resist and disrupt. Radical hospitality can be one of those forms of disruption in a world where the marginalized and oppressed among us have the door shut on them all too often. As a straight ally and clergy person, I might practice radical hospitality by attending any LGBT event wearing my stole, to let people know that they are holy children of this universe, and they are worthy of love and acceptance and welcome in our religious community. We might practice it right here at church by greeting one another with a smile and a hug as we do together on Sunday mornings, especially those we don't know well yet. Perhaps one of those 22 members that just joined last week. I'm sure many of us don't know them very well yet. Or we might remind people how much their presence here at BOOF means to us. We could be courageous enough to call it out loud, live it out loud. I'll demonstrate. Bobby Angel, we love you. We love that you are here in this community. Riley, we love that you are back with us today. And not just because you're trans, we love you because you're you, and you make our lives richer by your presence here. Thank you. We might practice radical hospitality to refugees by choosing their produce at the farmer's market and telling them out loud how happy we are that they live here among us because they make our lives richer. We might also be sure to take home a guest at your table jar. As this year's program is focused on refugees and honors the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee's 75-year history of radical hospitality, beginning with its origins when Martha and Reverend Waitzel Sharp helped European refugees escape persecution during World War II. What guests might we invite to our table during this season? As a quick aside, I thought I'd like to remind you or let some of you know, if you didn't know already, that this congregation raised over $2,100 back in September to send to the UU Service Committee's Refugee Crisis Fund. And as of last week, they have well exceeded their goal, raising more than $400,000 from Unitarian Universalist individuals and congregations. And we were part of that. I feel proud to be part of that. We can't all be on the ground with an aid organization, lending our hands, helping the refugees that are fleeing Syria and other parts of the world, or on the ground, helping the people of Paris recover from this tragedy. So we give as an extension of ourselves and our desire to be of service through our financial generosity. That, too, is radical hospitality in today's world. And our continued support of and radical hospitality for refugees will be needed now more than ever. That in the face of violence, we don't shut down and close our doors, but fling them open and allow our hearts to be open and not to harden or go numb, but to feel the pain and feel the suffering, and feel the love. Radical hospitality is both an internal and an external practice, and we must practice it full out here at this church, if nowhere else. So I want to narrow my focus a little bit and talk about how we practice it here at BOOF. As Unitarian Universalists, we pride ourselves on being welcoming. We strive to be inclusive of all identities, races and ethnicities, ages and abilities, religious backgrounds and theological beliefs. Welcoming the stranger may seem natural to some of us, but how well do we succeed in practical terms? How well do we practice radical hospitality, especially when we're uncomfortable? Or when we don't fully understand the other in our midst? Latina theologian Ana Marie Pineda writes, "One New Testament word incorporates a profound truth, xenos, the word that means stranger in Greek, also means guest and host. This one word signals the essential mutuality that is at the heart of hospitality. No one is strange except in relation to someone else. We make one another guests and hosts by how we treat one another." There was a time when we were all strangers to this community in one form or another. Even those who were born here into this fellowship probably found themselves returning in their young adult years as something of a stranger, looking for where they might fit. Think back to that time. For some of you, it's very recent. For others, it may be 30 years or more. But think back to that time when you were first a stranger to this community. How were you welcomed? Did you receive radical hospitality? Did you receive any hospitality at all? I certainly hope you did. But sometimes, and we've all heard the stories, we know that our churches fall short in this area. BOOF members Jay and Carol Wechselberger share the story of walking in to their first UU church in Eastern Washington for the very first time, and no one talked to them. They liked the worship enough to stick it out, but still, no one? And they're not exactly the shy retiring types. It was this experience that prompted them to join our welcoming ministry team when they moved here, because they didn't want anyone else to have that experience. Our Unitarian Universalist Association president, Peter Morales, shared a similar story from his former congregation in Golden, Colorado. Like many UU congregations, they thought they were welcoming and friendly, but when they took the time to really assess the reality of what newcomers experienced, they were a little bit appalled. Often their guests were not warmly welcomed. Far too often they stood alone, awkwardly, at coffee hour. The difference between their self-image of hospitality and the reality of their behavior surprised them. This was not how they wanted to be. And they turned it around. They made simple changes. Peter likes to say, it's not rocket science. They recruited warm and welcoming greeters. They helped newcomers meet the minister and meet new people during coffee hour. They changed their welcome words. They made time for greeting neighbors during the welcome. Many of the things that we do well here at BOOF. Overall, they worked to create a culture of hospitality that involved everyone in the congregation. They made it a disciplined spiritual practice, and it worked. And in the process, they were transformed. Now, I am not saying these things to point to any particular problems or deficiencies here at BOOF, although I imagine we could find some stories where hospitality and that feeling of genuine welcome was lacking. But I'm preaching about this because it's good for us to do some honest self-reflection once in a while, both individually and collectively, and to ask ourselves, where do we fall short? Because we human beings are tribal people. We like to be with people we know. In his book, Bowling Alone, author Robert Putnam found, after examining tons of data, that when people live in more diverse areas, as opposed to homogeneous ones, they tend to interact less. They tend to retreat and hunker down. And he included that we are more comfortable when we're with people we know. Remember the radical part of disruption, right? It's true here at church. We gravitate towards our friends. Towards people we know well, or those that share some similarity with us, either in age or interest or background. And to some degree, that's normal. And I want to encourage those connections based on shared interests and experiences. Parents of babies should talk to other parents of babies, but not exclusively. At the same time, we must also ask ourselves, how can I offer radical hospitality on Sunday mornings? And are there any instances that might challenge me when my unfamiliarity may cause me some discomfort or resistance? Let's think about some examples. a man from an evangelical background who waves his hands in the air during hymns and audibly says amens. A person who talks out loud to themselves during worship, exhibiting possible mental illness. A young mom with a toddler who has separation issues, and the toddler likes to play with the hymnals and crawl on and off mom's lap during the sermon. A young adult who has just graduated college and relocated here for a job and knows no one and is African American. A youth who openly questions their gender identity during joys and sorrows. A refugee family that speaks broken English. Or a homeless person that hasn't bathed in a week. How would we welcome them? How might we offer radical hospitality? Sometimes I think it's easier to practice radical hospitality in blanket justice-related terms, like refugees welcome in Idaho and add the words. But how do we extend that practice right here in this fellowship with the people we see every week? How might we challenge ourselves to adapt and hone the spiritual practice of hospitality, to take risks and welcome any individuals and stay open to the insights of people and experiences different from our own? Here's a few ideas. Find someone you don't know during coffee hour and introduce yourself. Okay, that goes without saying. But then take them to meet someone else and introduce them to someone else they might not know. Offer to walk with a newcomer to go get some coffee. Invite someone new over for dinner or out for coffee during the week. Will it feel awkward? It might, but do it anyway. Often during joys and sorrows, there are more hands up in the air than we have time to hear from during the service. And I heard a beautiful story of a member who noticed someone seated near her had had their hand up and did not get a chance to share. So after worship, she turned and asked, "What was the joy or sorrow you didn't get to share?" What a beautiful expression of radical hospitality. I encourage all of us to do these things and more. Author Christine Pohl writes that when we express hospitality, we make a powerful statement to the world about who is interesting, valuable, and important to us. She reminds us that in hospitality, the stranger is welcomed into a safe, personal, and comfortable place, a place of respect and acceptance and friendship. Even if only briefly, the stranger is included in a life-giving, life-sustaining network of relations. When we engage in the practice of radical hospitality, we make an investment in one another's lives. We pull up a chair and we invite someone to sit down beside us. We bring our own vulnerabilities and tenderness. We open ourselves up and invite another person in. We affirm the inherent worth and dignity through the transforming power of love, even when it is hard or uncomfortable. We honor and celebrate the pictures of dragons, even if they look like cats. Radical hospitality is based on listening to one another, on the conviction that every life is sacred. It does not mean we have to like everyone we meet. Our humanness has some limitations. But it is about receiving rather than judging. Above all else, when we practice radical hospitality, it means welcoming those into fellowship who may be on the margins of society. Radical hospitality begins with us as we work to open our hearts and our lives when we recognize that all are strangers, and all of us are wanderers and seekers. I invite you to engage with me in this spiritual practice of radical hospitality and open yourself up to transformation. We are all guests and hosts. We are all invited into the tent. We are all welcome at the table. May it be so. Amen. Let us join together in a moment of silent reflection.